From the Squamish Chief.
This is the Squamish Sound. I'm Keely Bartlett.
And I'm Stephen Chua. This is the 33rd episode of our weekly podcast.
You'll hear the story behind the story as we take you into the newsroom. We'll talk about what did and didn't get into the newspaper this week.
On the show today, we mark Remembrance Day with two stories of veterans in Squamish and the latest on the plastic reduction by Squamish Council. First off, Remembrance Day is soon approaching.
Mm-hmm.
Keely has been looking into various stories for the paper regarding Remembrance Day. And I think one thing that she found out is that while a lot of us think of Remembrance Day as something in the distant past, there are a lot of aspects of it that are very present and alive today. And I was wondering if you could tell us about that.
Yeah, so I think when I was looking at some of the stories that we had previously covered in Squamish, I obviously came across last year's coverage where the Squamish Four, so four very well-known World War veterans in Squamish, had their birthdays all last year, where two of them turned 95 and two of them turned 100.
Wow.
So it was a big, momentous occasion, and their birthdays are in October and November, so right around Remembrance Day. So the Legion threw them this great birthday party, and I think it was a wonderful story when we covered it last year, and it still is. But one thing I find when I think of Remembrance Day, and when a lot of people think of Remembrance Day, is you tend to think of that generation of the World War soldiers. So
right.
World War I, World War II. And as they are approaching those older ages, they aren't going to be with us for much longer. So sometimes people have this tendency to think that Remembrance Day, it's so connected to the past.
Mm-hmm.
But we spoke with a veteran who is only 32. And he talked a lot about how for veterans like him, it is every day, and it'll continue to be every day for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a really interesting highlight from our story with Jamie Flynn. So Flynn served with the British Parachute Regiment for 8 years, and he originally became involved in the British Army when he was 16 years old. And he was first deployed on his first of three tours of duty when he was only 18.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so he's 32 now, and he has been out of the military for quite some time, but he is now a professional base jumper, which is such a Squamish story.
It is.
But, yeah, I thought it was really interesting how he talked a lot about how he uses his social media networks and channels to share his stories about how it is hard to return to civilian life, that it's not always easy, and what that continues to mean for him. But it was also like a really interesting way for him to come to terms with how he was feeling. But a lot of other veterans reached out to him too for some help and some support, which I think is really interesting, because when you do think of those older generations, they didn't have that same network and platform. I think for a lot of them, that's what the Legion was
right.
They had that network of people who had served or are related to people who've served. Whereas now, through social media, we do have a way to spread these stories a little bit farther. I did think it was also really interesting that for Jamie Flynn, he went from parachuting for the military to base jumping as his next career step, and recreationally, of course.
Right, yeah.
Because I think a lot of people, and I mistakenly thought so too, think that it's very similar. Like, why, like, you can see these natural progressions of how they would be similar.
Yeah.
But he was actually telling me that base jumping is actually really geeky, which I didn't know.
Interesting.
Because you just think the people who are launching off of these high elevations are, you know, you think of them as daredevils.
That's right.
But he kind of, this was a lot of stuff that I couldn't fit into this one story. It was already really long and really interesting. But he got in really in depth about the stories and misconceptions of base jumping, that he said that there are a lot of parameters for them to actually launch. So they will go through a bunch of different scenarios. They'll talk about the weather, the wind, if they feel like jumping that day. There are so many things that lead up to that moment that he said most of the time they'll go up and they won't actually launch. They'll just hike back down.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really interesting way that he said that it was actually very dissimilar from the military, where
you just have to go.
You just have to question. Do it. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. You're going to get kicked out of this plane.
Yeah.
Literally, if you don't do it on your own. Whereas base jumping, there's like, you know, I have a weird feeling about this. Or they'll look at something and they'll just be like, not today.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting. And he said that one thing that was kind of similar was the sense of camaraderie among the base jumpers.
Mm.
You know, that was very similar to serving with his friends and his troops.
Yeah, I could see that. It's such a specialized niche kind of skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Both relatively quite dangerous. And so I could see, like, that's, you, people bond over hard things, and that's definitely one of them, I could see. Yeah.
Yeah, they bond over that common experience. And then also just that you only know what that is like, serving in the military or base jumping, if you've done it.
Yeah.
You don't really know what it's like until you have done it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just such a Squamish element of this veteran story that I think a lot of us, even if we aren't veterans and we're not base jumpers,
yeah,
and we're not both at the same time, I think it's just a really interesting insight into what those two worlds are like together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we also did actually intend to have one Remembrance Day story this year, and we ended up having two because I was told that it would be a good idea to reach out to Ken Ward. So he is a local researcher. He's a member of the Legion. And I called him up because just on the off chance that he'd found anything new in his research. And it turns out that he had.
Oh, okay.
So I just thought this was really interesting because I think there is also that misconception that what more can there be to say about the world wars, right? Are there stories in our community, our small community, that haven't been told? And there are, and there probably always will be, which is really interesting. But this one story was about how when Ken Ward was with the Legion 10 years ago, he was trying to find out some more information about veterans who were no longer with us. And so he went to the district who maintained the local cemetery. And when he was speaking to them, he found out that the Legion was unaware that it owned plots for veterans in the cemetery.
Oh, okay.
So there are 40 of them, and many of them were unmarked. So over the course of the last decade, he has been working with the Last Post Fund to put those markers in place and to give people back their names and their stories. And I think that was really interesting that he... A lot of these veterans we knew had served in Squamish or had lived in Squamish after they served. Sorry, they didn't serve in Squamish. But a lot of these veterans we already knew had lived in Squamish either before or after they served.
Right.
But I think there is this idea that, you know, they were here in Squamish soil and we didn't know where they were. And so it's nice that they are remembered with, you know, this physical form of the military marker from the Last Post Fund. But Ken Ward also told me that, you know, there are some more things that they'd like to see happening. They would like to see more people coming forward with their family stories, especially current veterans who live in Squamish.
Yeah.
They'd like to hear more from them as well. And there are some questions that they still have. There is a veteran's grave in the Squamish cemetery that they still don't know who's there. They don't know whose remains those are.
Jeez.
Yeah, so there are still some unanswered questions. And, you know, I know Ken would love to dig in a little bit more into our past and especially what stories are still out there.
Yeah.
So you can read about the veterans who are currently in the Squamish Cemetery in those Legion plots in the newspaper this week. So Ken and the Legion provided a bunch of information that is in our Remembrance Day feature. And you can read a little bit about each one and see their photos. Most of them are in their uniforms, which is just really interesting to put those names and faces together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's still so much more to learn.
Mm-hmm. And so Ken Ward also told me that in Stan Clark Park, where we have the cenotaph, there are also 23 birch trees. And some people might know this, but there is not yet a plaque there to have the honor roll call names that those trees were planted for.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So he'd still like to see that. He's still got some more ideas for what we can do to honor our veterans and the people from our community who are still currently serving. So, yeah, if you have stories you'd like to share, you can reach out to us, but you can also reach out to Ken at the Legion. You can also find out some information about Remembrance Day events in the pages of our newspaper. That is coming up on Monday, November 11th, and there will be a ceremony at Stan Clark Park and in front of Totem Hall.
Okay, the next thing we have on the list is the plastics reduction. So this is a story that's been ongoing for quite some time since it was first brought up in council earlier this year. Mm-hmm. The latest development is basically that Squamish has decided it will not ask for the province's blessing when it comes to implementing their plastics reduction.
So what does that even mean for us?
Okay, so here's the thing. In Tuesday's meeting, they had a vote on whether to grant the bylaw, the proposed plastics reduction, all three readings. Mm-hmm. On that vote, they voted unanimously, yes, let's do it. But there was a separate vote as to whether they should ask for the Minister of Environment's approval. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is there was a recent court case that came through. A lot of you have probably heard that Victoria tried to ban plastic bags outright. Mm-hmm. And the latest ruling from the BC Court of Appeal said that effort to do so was actually not lawful because they did not ask for the permission of the Minister of Environment. Mm. So Victoria has said, all right, we're going to try appealing this to the Supreme Court of Canada. We don't know if the Supreme Court will hear it or not because they throw out the majority of applications given to them. We will see. But in the meantime, as it stands, the courts have said, you want to change the law with respect to plastic bags? You want to ban them? Well, you got to ask the province for permission.
So why has Squamish voted not to do that?
Okay, so there was a split vote on this. So it was a little bit of there were some points of disagreement. Mm-hmm. So
that's a diplomatic way to put it.
Yes. So there was the vote was 4-3 in favor of not asking the province for approval. And I'll give you the reasons on both sides. So there were three councillors, mm-hmm. Doug Race, John French, and Eric Anderson, who wanted to get the province's approval first. Mm-hmm. The rest of them, that would be Mayor Karen Elliott, Jenna Stoner, Armand Herford, and Chris Pettingill said, nah, let's just go for it. Mm-hmm. So here's what each side had to say. So the side who was for getting provincial approval, mm-hmm. Most of the arguments were made by Doug Race. Mm-hmm. He's and on top of being a counselor, he used to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You probably all know him from Race & Co. Back in the day. And he gave like a very legally kind of grounded argument. He's like, you know what? This has been before the courts. Mm-hmm. And if we do decide to try to adopt this without getting approval, we do open ourselves up to litigation.
So they could themselves go into court.
They could. So if anyone decides to launch some sort of court challenge, if the district has done this, mm-hmm. I mean, it could open themselves up
without permission of the Ministry of Environment.
Exactly. It leaves mm-hmm. them vulnerable in that sense. So that was his argument.
And the other argument that you wrote about mm-hmm. was that could affect taxpayers.
Yes. And Race was just like, yeah, this could be costly. And then John French immediately agreed. He's like, yeah, I want to do the thing that is fiscally responsible. He said he would agree with Race in that case. Eric Anderson didn't say much, mm-hmm. so I can't really speak to what was on his mind, but he did vote in agreement with those other two. So that's the camp of three. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we had Mayor Elliott saying, okay, Victoria's case was actually a ban, but what we're proposing is no longer a ban, it's a reduction. Because previously, council's goal was to try to just get rid of plastic bags, get rid of straws. But as they kept on revising the proposal over and over and over again, they realized it wasn't quite as feasible due to accessibility issues with people with disabilities, as well as a whole lot of other issues with respect to carbon footprint. They said, staff said, if you ban plastic bags, you risk people using more paper bags or like fiber or cloth-based bags, which cost more resources and could contribute to a greater carbon footprint. So
the opposite effect of the intention.
exactly, right? So they opted instead of reducing it. And by reducing it, the tool that they hope to use is to impose fees, which presumably if people have to pay for these bags more and more often, then they will be less inclined to keep on just taking them over and over and over again. Anyways, long story short, she said, this is a reduction. This is not a ban. We're well within our power to do this. And Councillor Jenna Stoner and a few other of the councillors also took note of the fact that it typically takes a very long time for the province to get back to them on things. And they are currently in the phase where they're taking feedback from a variety of municipalities and local government bodies as to what should happen with respect to plastic bags and single-use plastics. and it could take, you know, on the optimistic side, maybe a few months, but it could also take a few years. And we don't really know how long that waiting period could be. And in light of that, the councillors are saying, like, geez, I mean, if we could be waiting years, this is a problem that needs fixing now. So let's just go ahead with this because we, Squamish has declared a climate emergency. We need to take fast action. Let's just go. So that was the two prevailing arguments, and we will soon see, I guess, if it does indeed open themselves up to any legal vulnerabilities. It's not an absolute given. Basically, in Victoria's case, it was the Association of Plastic Bags, like basically an organization representing plastic bag manufacturers and users and stuff like that, that launched the challenge. And I don't know if they'd be willing to go down to a smaller town like Squamish and try to pull the same thing. But the thing is that Squamish is not alone in taking this approach. There have been several other municipalities who have opted to just go ahead without asking for ministerial approval. There have also been some municipalities that have opted for a more cautious approach. In the end, I guess we will see as to what is the approach that has created the most risk or not, but
and affected the most change as well.
Exactly.
That's ultimately what they're trying to do.
Right. So as a result of this, long story short, a lot of you who may not be familiar with, who don't always sit in council, it goes through three readings and then it goes for a final adoption. The adoption, when it actually gets signed into law, will now happen a lot sooner. It will probably happen within the new future, we'll say weeks, maybe a few months at the most. Whereas if they had to wait for the province's approval, they would have just been waiting indefinitely before being able to sign that into law. So I'm expecting this to become a bylaw in full effect, at least at the latest by the end of this year.
And that was what their original intention was when they first talked about doing a ban, was by the end of 2019.
Exactly, yeah.
Looks like they're keeping that. The Squamish Sound is brought to you by the Squamish Chief. The music for this episode was produced by Stephen Chua, cover photo by Clayton Matthews. Have a story tip? Give us a call at 604-892-9161. Send an email to news@squamishchief.com. You can read these stories and more online at squamishchief.com, the newspaper, and have the news delivered to your door every week.